primarily due to increasing numbers of student academic accommodations. And I wanted to let everyone know that these will be publicly available on our website, and we will share them with the Student Disability Services with VP Nishi over here. Thank you, Lisa, for attending. So for the Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education, and we'll also share it with Student Campus Life. And so it's an open forum. So just if you have feedback that you think will be important for these different places in the campus to know about, including the Registrar's Office, then this is an opportunity to share experiences from the classroom. And whomever wants to start the conversation, please go ahead. Just put up your virtual hand and we will just start the conversation. It's always harder to be the first one. Hi, Dorothy. Thank you.
Hi. So I'm actually giving feedback from the whole vet school. So this is not just me who's talking about this. So I'd say so we have used the University Proctors, and that actually, when we have used them, we haven't used them for everything. When we have used them, those have actually worked really well. And they're very helpful, huge break for the faculty. What's been difficult for us is the 1.25 time, 1.5 time, the trying to get that set up. You know, we actually have our own exam software, but even in the Canvas exams, it's difficult to, like, you know, have these people starting and stopping at different times is difficult. And then the double time accommodations is also really difficult.
And that is not so surprising probably to Lisa Nishi over here, who has been doing a lot of the administration of the central testing. And I know that they have David Schmoys, who's using all of his computational prowess to really figure out the logistics of accommodating all those different times. The double time is a very difficult one to accommodate, even with all the computational power that they have. So that's a very helpful feedback. Thank you. Abigail?
Hey. Yeah, I just wanted to give a little bit of feedback about that as well as a little bit of other stuff. But yeah, so I had 600 people in my class this semester. So I did try to use the alternative testing program. And I agree that it was hard to set up in Canvas. Like the fact that I still had to set up like the double and, you know, 1.5 time made that like difficult. And I think also the students weren't kind of sure always what was happening with the alternative testing program. So I actually ended up sometimes doing the administration side, like maybe for half the students, you know, and some of them I just like let, like, you know, have another place to take the test. So I ended up dealing with a lot of like things that were like one-off, but like in a class of 600, that's like 20 people. So there were kind of a lot of things, and I think this probably will smooth out like as they get more used to it. So I don't know if it's going to be like a long-term problem, but I do feel like that was one issue. And then the other thing that I wanted to bring up, I guess, was that like, I just felt, I mean, I think the reason we're here is that there was a lot more volume of people needing accommodations due to like probably, you know, a good thing, which might be that it's more like known, well known that this can be done, but also the like bad thing that like things are pretty hard for all of us right now, including students. And I felt like a lot of compassion for them and like worry, I guess. And I think that like one of the things that was like hard is that like I was seeing this huge volume of like people needing help, and you know, that we do have a lot of things in place for that, but I don't know. In some sense, I felt like I wasn't like doing enough, or that I needed to do something that was like on a bigger scale, because like I was just seeing that there was this thing happening to all of us that was like not necessarily like good for everyone's like health and mental health. So I kind of didn't know how to deal with that. And I also felt that like often the fact that we're asked to, you know, like we get messages from both SDSS as well as SDS, as well as, you know, the students' advisors kind of saying that this person needs accommodations. And then like, we need to respond to that. But I actually personally, like, am totally happy putting my trust, like, 100% in the advisor and SDS. Like, it just feels like there's two layers where maybe there only needs to be one. Like, if SDS tells me that something needs to happen, I'm like, it's done, you know, like, I'm not the kind of, like, I'm not going to argue with my students and their needs. So it just kind of felt like I was being, like, I was kind of, like, providing a layer that was maybe not needed. So I don't know exactly what to do with that, because I do want to know that, like, my students are safe and being cared for, but I don't really feel that it's, like, my, like, authority to, like, say yes or no to anything. So I kind of would be very happy if, you know, like, they were almost empowered to, like, you know, decide for themselves or with SDS. So I don't know. That's just my thoughts.
Abigail, can I just ask you two questions? First, what department are you? It'd be helpful if people could say that.
I'm in physics. Great.
What did you say?
Physics.
Physics. Okay. And the accommodations that you're referring to, where you're getting notes both from the advisor and from SDS, do you know if those were with temporary accommodations or academic accommodations that kind of come in at the, you know, and apply for the whole semester?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a mix of both. Like, sometimes I get something from SDS that's just temporary, you know, and or sometimes it has one long term, one temporary. Sometimes it's just like something came up, the advisor is letting me know. I don't know. I mean, I came up with a solution for myself recently at the advice of a colleague from another university, which is kind of to have a form for them to fill out and, like, basically just give them automatically approve, you know, like, it's like, if you need an extension, like, I automatically approve it unless I say otherwise. So I guess that's kind of how I felt like might help, is that, like, if SDS or the advisor has decided that something is important for a student, like, I don't know that I need to approve it, you know, like, I default, like, accept that, I guess. So I'm just trying to figure out a way that we could maybe, like, have less layers, because, I mean, I don't know.
But it did result in additional burden outside of the scheduling of exams. Is that what you're?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah. So when you get an accommodation or you get someone, like, you know, they're like, I need this specific homework extended, I need this, I'm going to miss these days, you know, like, if I have an attendance policy for lecture, you know, I have labs, like, they miss, like, more labs than they have drops for, you know, like, there's, like, there's kind of, like, a whole thing that it goes through. And I would be happy to just be like, it's totally up to you. And I mean, I think that in the next semesters, I'm actually going to give that power to the students, because, like, I trust them. But I'm happy to give that power to SDS or, you know, anyone else.
I think I'm better understanding now. So outside of the examinations, it's those one-off type things that the students are asking for extensions or excused right. work and things like that.
Right. And for one-offs, like, in 600 class, it's like, I mean, I have many, like, tens at least, like, you know, for, so it's just a lot of, you know, responding. And especially, like, because, like, I do deeply care, like, I want to say yes, and I want them to have what they need. Like, I just almost am like, I don't even need to be asked, you know, like, cause I trust you.
And honestly, this could be a space where others who teach large classes could share sort of techniques that they use. I know some people allow students to drop their lowest assignment or something like that, so that they can make adult type choices about, you know, preparing for things. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I do allow them to drop, like, their lowest X things of everything. So, I mean, I think that's kind of why I'm here today, actually, is because I feel like this was beyond, like, I do feel like I have tools, and I feel like this semester was kind of beyond those tools working. Like, things were bad. Like, some people were like, I missed every single lab, you know, like, and I mean, not in a way where I'm like, that's not okay. Like, I'm like, it's just very hard for them right now, you know, and, like, something needs to take that into account.
Thank you so much, Abigail. Is anyone here from engineering? Because I have been hearing from different parts of engineering, and no one could really give me the details of what exactly is happening in the classroom. And so that's partially actually why I did this. So I'm hoping that there is someone here from the School of Engineering, College of Engineering, sorry. No? And does anyone else want to contribute? Oh, there you go. Hi, Eve.
Hi. So I'm actually our DGS in material science. So I'm not, I feel like I'm maybe the worst one to comment on exactly what's happening in the classroom this semester, because I did not teach this semester. But I will echo Abigail's comment and probably everyone else's comment that I do think we saw a massive increase in just overall volume of accommodations required. And I actually just attended because I'm here to kind of represent our grad students, and we've actually seen In Q exams, A exams, and B exams, a big increase in the need for accommodations in those exams. And I think I'm working with SDS on our Q exams right now. And I actually think our current system is not really designed for or take into account field exams that are not like registrar scheduled classes. And so I've been working with SDS as well as with the grad school to kind of take those into account because we are seeing such a large increase in volume. So I'm sorry, I can't comment directly on like classes within engineering, but I will say like my experience with our grad students is consistent with the experience that people are describing for the undergrads.
Thank you. Yes, I was thinking that this would be primarily focused on the undergraduates because that's what I've heard. This is the first I've heard of the qualifiers also having coming up against this, but it does make sense. So thank you for bringing that forward. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Pritchard. I'm in Science and Technology Studies in the Arts College. So I'm representing more the humanities and interpretive social sciences. I can't stay around for very long, so I just wanted to toss a few things out there. And I don't think my comments are very helpful. They're pretty general, although I have one specific example from a class pre-COVID. You know, I suspect a lot of us on the one hand, we want to support and legally we're supposed to support accommodations, right? Both temporary and chronic issues. And that's legally the right thing to do, but morally and ethically, it's the right thing to do. As Abigail said earlier, I think a lot of us have compassion for students even before COVID in terms of struggles and challenges and so forth. And none of them are going to do their best work if they're falling apart. It has been really challenging and of course worse with the pandemic in terms of the lack of technical support, the lack of staff support. For instance, when readings needed to be on Canvas that were ADA compliant, one of our staff people in our department, she quickly got some training, but basically there was a very limited staff support in our department to help faculty with that. And it really was sort of first come, first serve. And if she wasn't available, then faculty or instructors, including TAs first year writing seminar, but instructors would need to do it on their own. And for some of us, you know, this is a steep learning curve. amid a lot of other challenging circumstances professionally, but also personally. In pre-COVID, I was teaching my larger survey, which compares nothing with Abigail's or some others. It has 60 to 90 students, depending on the year. Again, this was pre-COVID. My two TAs and I had 65 students in the class, and we were keeping track of 19 students. So almost a third of the class who had health issues, mental health issues, you know, family emergencies. Some went AWOL and then we were trying to follow up, you know, find out what was going on, trying to touch base with the student, reach out to their advising dean and so on. And we meet with my TAs, I meet weekly for an hour, and often we were spending more than 45 minutes talking about the 19 students, which meant we had a few minutes to talk about actual content for the class, including discussion sections. That was pre-COVID. And another thing that I'm sensing in part from comments from students is that some students feel like more faculty or instructors are flexible and others are much less flexible. And so understandably, they're asking for more accommodations or accommodations at all for the more flexible professors. And we might think about gender or race or other factors here in terms of who might be more flexible or not, but there's also the reality of these huge classes, which I'm not responsible for. And of course, it's extremely difficult when you're concerned about 600 students or 200 students and plagiarism and these kinds of things. But I think for some of us, we may have been the flex, so to speak, in their classes or deadlines or systems. And in a lot of ways, that's okay with me. But when I'm starting to keep track of a third of my students with concerns or a whole bunch of deadlines, but also trying to return work in a timely fashion, but I have to, you know, make sure that the work is in before I return the graded work and so forth, I don't know what the answer is at all. And I know the university has been working on this, and I appreciate that this is on the radar still again. But yeah, there's no clearly no easy solutions, but I have to say it's not working. So thanks for sharing the long-winded comments.
So your focus was pre-COVID. Was that a choice for why you were choosing that period of time rather than now? Are you arguing that things are like, are, how are things post-COVID, let's say, now that?
That data point was one that came to mind because that was the last time I taught that larger class.
Okay.
I taught that class during the, well, I taught it spring of 2020, but not since then, but I'll be teaching it.
Basically, even then you were addressing the a third of the class, and now it could even be different, even more so.
Yeah. And I have a number of smaller classes, and I would say a third of the students, whether it's a seminar of 15 or a survey class of 60 or 70, again, not the scale of 200, 600 and so forth, but still, you know, and we don't have an army of TAs supporting. So anyway, just a few thoughts from my trenches anyway.
Thanks. Yeah, it's helpful because I'm glad that you're here because we do tend to hear about the larger STEM focused classes. And so it's good to understand how all the other disciplines are affected. So thank you. And Charlie, because you're one of the few that have your camera on, I saw you nodding. So did you want to share sort of experiences that you've had in the classroom? And actually, I was talking to Charlie Trotman. I just realized that I have two Charlies here today. So I was asking you, Charlie Trotman. Yeah. And Charlie Walcott, I think you were muted if you were speaking.
Okay. Thank you, Eva. Yeah. So I'm on the other side of the spectrum because I teach now in psychology, and my classes are fairly small. But I was interested in hearing what everybody had to say here, because this is I'm coming back into teaching after having done other things for a number of years, and this is all very new to me, and I'm finding it, even with a small number of students, very frustrating when you lay out a syllabus at the beginning of the semester, which has all of the assignments, their due dates, the final paper, its due date, and everything is very well defined. And then some students, you know, and I had 25% of my students this last semester on accommodations of one sort or another. And, then even with everything very well defined in terms of its due dates and everything, a week beforehand, you know, a number of students will say, well, I can't turn it in on time. I need to, you know, I need some more time. And so I was curious what other people's experiences with that was. The second thing I wanted to mention, as long as I have the floor for a second, is that I have a number of colleagues in other universities around the country, and I'm sure all of you on this call are in the same boat. You have colleagues, and they're all getting very, very tired, and they're ready. Some of them are retiring early because they just can't do this anymore. you know, they're at that point in their career where this kind of says, okay, this is it, I've had it. So I wonder what it's doing to the faculty, to all of us, in terms of, you know, our health and our ability to do our best work here. So thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Charlie Walcott, do you want to add to the conversation?
I could add only a little bit. A number of years ago, I taught a small course, Introductory Biology, with about 700 students. And what we did was to always have makeups for the exams scheduled afterwards. And we weren't terribly fussy about the excuses that people might offer to take the makeups. And the makeups were exams that were similar to the main exam, but different, so that there was none of that. We look at the main exam and then we go in for the makeup. That wouldn't have helped them very much. It seemed to work out all right. But my sense is that things have gotten very much worse in the time since, because that was quite a long while ago. And that things, at least in Bio 22.10, which I also teach in, a very large percentage of the class has problems with exams of one thing or another and requires special attention. And so I think that's really changed over the years, and in my opinion, not for the better. That's all I have to contribute.
Thank you, Charlie. Dorothy.
Yeah, sorry. So this was not that related. Now I'm talking about undergraduate course. So in response to the first Charlie's, actually, I went to something that was that Mark Charvery ran about extensions, which was which I did for my final project. Just the week ahead of time, I was like, okay, everyone gets 25 extra hours. So, you know, that's the extension, because then it's fair and everyone gets that same amount. So that actually, I think, helped a lot. But the other comment I wanted to make is not the extra time accommodations, but the other accommodations, like classroom accommodations, that kind of, I think other people sort of alluded to, where, you know, you have your schedule set up and you have, I have certain classes that are required because they're discussions. And then someone has a classroom accommodation where they can miss that. And so that's fine. You come up with makeup work, but then I would just say I had one student who then, you know, first time did contact me, next time didn't contact me, and I like contacted them and it took a long time to come back. And, you know, someone has an accommodation for one thing, and then there's something else that comes on top of it. And it's like, I don't know how to deal with it. You know, it's like, oh, then this person finally gets back to me and then they want an extension and their accommodation isn't for an extension. And I, you know, it just gets hard to deal with.
Thank you, Debbie. Dorothy, sorry. does anyone else want to contribute to the conversation? We do have a Debbie here though. Yeah, go ahead, Lindsay.
Hi, I just wanted to, in kind of, I guess, support of Sarah's statement that I do get the feeling, I don't have any data, but I get the feeling that the requests are inequitable, especially the non-formal SDS requests, but the night before something's due extension requests, I get a lot of, about a third of my students last semester requested an extension. And I do get the feeling, sometimes they'll even say in the email, I know you're so understanding, or thanks for always being so accommodating. I get that comment very directly pretty often. And I, because it's an added burden and it seems to be paired with certain identities, I'm a little worried about the equity of that. And I don't know what the solution is, but I do often wish that I could just lean on a policy or something so that it's not my decision. And I could, you know, say, oh, this is the policy, you can refer to it. And it's not me making the decision. That would be honestly a lot easier. And in my opinion, much more equitable. And a kind of similar to what, who was saying this? I want to say Abigail was saying, I kind of don't feel like it's any of my business what their problems are. I'm not their boss or something. So if someone somewhere decided they needed an accommodation, then again, I don't think it's should be up to me, both because I feel like it's not my business and they, you know, if they need something, they need something. And also because of, I suspect it's quite inequitable. Who's asked what? And I don't know what the solution is.
Sorry, Lindsay, could I just ask another clarifying question? So when you say students, I feel like I heard two things. I just want to make sure I'm clear. So on the one hand, students the night before something is due might reach out and say, I know you're so awesome. Can I have an extension, right? You're so understanding. That to me sounds like a formal one that they are asking for directly. And then there's also perhaps the temporary accommodations or other SDS kind of sanctioned flexibility. And I think you were talking about equity in both instances, with the first kind of the faculty who might, you know, bear more of the burden of being asked perhaps. And then were you also wondering about equity and who might have the SDS accommodations? I want to make sure I wasn't confounding things.
Right. I'm sorry. I meant who's asked is, I suspect, preferentially. And that's the
informal kind of, can I have an extension kind of
ask. That's my impression.
Okay.
I don't get a sense that there's inequity in terms of assigning. I guess implicitly trust SDS that they're using evidence and all that. So that feels fine to me anyways, based on what I know.
Thanks,
Lindsay. Mark.
Yeah, thank you. So I teach a large introductory biology course, the laboratory section of that Charlie brought up earlier. And we have around 400 students. And Dorothy mentioned earlier, we had a lunch and learn with Kaz when I mentioned how we have a built-in extension in our curriculum, because we ran into the same problem as everybody else here, that we had an increased number of non-SDS requests for extension on our assignments. So we have built-in extension for each of the assignments. And what we have noticed that the students used it more like as a safety net rather than really relying on that extension. So many of them used it, but not for all of the assignments, which was very nice to see. And also, I felt like it was created a more inclusive classroom, because one of the issues is that not all of the students know that they can ask for an extension, and not all of the students are brave enough to ask for an extension. So when we are not explicitly stating that there are, you know, opportunities for extensions, then some of the students are not really knowing it, or you can call it as a part of the hidden curriculum, but they are not aware of that they can ask for extension, and that may have incorrectly impact their final grade, because those who ask for extension, we provide it to them. So instead of doing that, we build it into our syllabus, and it worked really well to provide explicit extension for all of the assignments.
And with an explicit time frame, like you can take some exercise at some point in the semester, one extension for one assignment of up to 72 hours. I'm making it up, but something like that.
So it was longer. So prior to that, we had extension, but with penalty. So we had penalty-free extension, usually 1 week or two, depending on what our pedagogies allowed us. So we wanted to make sure that the students did not procrastinate and suffer by submitting assignments late, because we wanted to make sure that they build on that knowledge they gained from those assignments. But we provided at least a week as an extension, and it really helped many of the students. And we were surprised that fewer students that we expected took advantage of it. But the end of the semester survey, they said that they appreciated this, because they saw that if they needed an extension, it was already built in. They didn't need to send an email. They didn't beg for it. And it was there for them as a safety net. And they really liked that.
Thank you, Mark. So Debbie or Nicola or Marina, if you guys wanted to contribute, feel free. And do you think, so one of the things that, one of the conversations that will be happening over the summer is building a testing accommodation center. At least something that's being considered. Would something like that be helpful? And I can give an example of a model. I came from another institution, large institution, where you would just submit your exam to that center and the student would go to that place and everything would be taken care of by the accommodation center. Yeah, Eve.
I would be super supportive of that. I think the current, like the accommodations program that, or the program to schedule the proctored test spaces has been really great, but still, I know that it's been a challenge even before when we had to schedule our own locations for like extended time test taking. It was like Thunderdome to compete with our colleagues to get spaces for extended time test taking, because obviously all the exams are on the same nights. We all needed those conference rooms on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And to some extent, that's still the case. Like no new classroom space has become available. And so I think it would be, I know, you know, we've recruited colleagues from other institutions, just like you described now, where they just really loved having that resource available. And in my opinion, that's like really ideal scenario where we could just send our exam and have our student take the exam at, you know, whatever time was the designated time. And then they would just have that resource available to us or to them so that they would, we would not be so limited by resources for, or existing spaces for extended time exams or other kinds of accommodations.
This is something that the Office of the Registrar, along with the Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education, have been really confronted with trying to create this pilot testing accommodation program, just to pilot it. Is it something that we can do university-wide? But right now, it's quite limited in terms of who has access. And for those of you who are on the call, I know there are not many of us here today, but there was a call in the Monday message that you can start signing up for that resource now. So you heard it here.
Yeah, so let me just respond to that. So I want to acknowledge Abigail, who started by saying that in a 600-person class, there things were not yet, you know, 100% smooth with the, the ATP, we call it, the alternative testing program. And you're absolutely right that communication has been the hardest thing. And you know, working out the kinks in the system. And a big part of it has been students, having them understand the different steps they need to go through to register their exams if they are in a course that's being supported by the ATP. It's just different. And so we really need to work closely together. We had classes where the faculty were, I think, very explicit with the students and communicating exactly what was expected of them, and did it multiple times in the very beginning. And when the students got it, it went off, you know, without a hitch, so to speak. So that partnership is really helpful. And also it's one human behind that whole program, one and a half, really. And so, you know, there's also process improvements, right, to try to make it more manageable for that one human to manage the thousands and thousands of emails and requests. So thanks for your patience. I think with every semester, it will get better. And short of a center, like Eve mentioned, you know, this is what we have. We have figured out ways to be able to get better access to rooms, because that was very difficult also. And we have to be able to do that to solve for the collective, right? And I think we're getting closer. So, and yeah, any course interested can sign up. We're gonna go all in and try our very best.
I can say one other part of why it was so effective at the previous institution is the students had the first 2 weeks to submit their paperwork for their accommodation. And so everybody, and then you weren't allowed to submit it anymore unless there was some new accommodation that you didn't know. But if you had a pre-existing accommodation, you had a 2-week window and that was it. And so I think that helped instructors predict what their semester was going to look like. I think that what I'm hearing from faculty here is students are handing them in at different times, maybe just before an assignment, when and so there was no way to predict, you know, what resources were needed to go towards that student or multiple students. Hi, Dor. Yeah.
Sorry, I have a lot of questions.
Oh no, this is great.
I have a question. So, you know, for some of our exams, we allow students to ask questions during the exam to get things clarified. So, how does that work if it's a centralized place? If you're not there?
Such an important question. When we were first trying to figure out what this might look like, and we had a meeting with faculty and got various suggestions and input, we heard from faculty in CS that because their classes are so big anyway, and they're split across multiple rooms often for an exam, what they've done is they just have a policy where they're not answering questions in any room. And it's, if you have a question, you can write it on your exam and say, I had this question, here's the assumption that I made or whatever, but that's part of it, so that it is equitable across the main exam and any other rooms, right? Or other alternate times of the exam. But faculty have the option of saying how they would like to have that handled. So in some cases they might have had their own TA in a room, or said, contact me at this number, right? Or any of my instructional team if there's a question. So we don't, you know, faculty have different preferences for how to address that. And we're working within the guidance given to us by faculty.
I can say at my previous institution that faculty would either, just like Lisa mentioned, have a TA, give their own cell phone, but have somebody from who's supporting the course be able to address questions in the moment. So the testing center would let you know when students in your class are going to be taking the exam, and you would then give them someone that they could contact if that's how you, I happen to choose that, but other people have other solutions. I saw a comment from Debbie. Debbie, did you want to give the comment yourself, or do you want me to read it?
I can read it out. I just wanted to comment directly on the idea of having those deadlines early. And a lot of our students are struggling with the pressures of ableism that comes, especially with an Ivy League college, but also from their own selves, their own internalized ableism. If they want to be able to do it on their own, they don't need the supports, the accommodations, the, you know, the crutch, to use a term that is kind of ironic when you're talking about ableism. And so a lot of them will try to force themselves to not use their accommodations. You know, they're getting a lot of these messages that the accommodations, it's making it too easy on you. You know, and you need to push yourself. You need to do that. So they try to, and then they get to that point of just like, if I don't have these accommodations, I'm going to have to drop this class. I might have to drop out of Cornell. I might have to completely leave the country, like all of these things that come up. And so that's the really difficult part of having those hard deadlines around when they need to ask for those accommodations, especially when it comes to extended deadlines or testing things. You're muted, Eve.
You're muted.
You know, how many years later? I was wondering, Debbie, if you thought that if it's framed in terms of students get in those accommodations in case you need them. So it's not, you know, it's there if needed rather than because you need them. I don't know, but I'm sure we could find a way to frame it so that, you know, everybody submits them, and then if they happen to need them, they can tap into that resource. I'm hoping at least that we could do something like that.
It's part of just continually building that culture at Cornell that these accommodations are not accommodations, you know, it's right. It's like, yeah. This is making the playing field completely equal amongst everybody and lifting those up who need to be lifted up in a little bit, and because they're perfectly capable of performing at the high level that we want here at Cornell.
Thank you for saying that, Mark.
Thank you. I just have a question that comes up sometimes and not as frequently anymore because of our built-in explicit extensions, but sometimes when something happens to a student and then they reach out and they ask for extension, they do that for every single other class they are taking. So suddenly they end up with this big pile of assignments that they are working on while they are already preparing for their next assignment or next exam. So I wonder if anybody has a good idea, when is the moment when you say that, oh, you don't need to submit this assignment? And how do you decide which assignment is not important? Because sometimes giving extension or accommodation to a student may not benefit them because they are already under so much pressure that that will just pile up new things on their plate that is already full. Thinking if they were sick, they were in an accident, for example, and they are returning. So anybody has any good ideas about that?
I saw Lisa sit up. That must have come into your office or something before.
Waiting for the answer. I mean, I think there's a similar version of that is it's really difficult. Sometimes taking an incomplete or several incompletes feels like the only way to get through a particular time. But of course, that can really make the next semester difficult if they're not completed by then. So it's a more compressed version, right? What you just said. But I sat up because I was waiting for to hear how others would respond.
I can say what I've done in the past when I've had students who have fallen into that circumstance. I have them work with the college student support system and make sure that all the instructors are coordinated through that that office, and they can help the student pace the work. So I try to use the college resources. I don't know what college you're in, Mark, but I try to get the student and their student as their advisor, try to get them the right supports, and then go team and work this out with the instructors and pace yourself. But I know that that's just a one-on-one type of solution, not something more comprehensive and broad. But
thank you.
Yeah, of course. Marina, did you want to add anything to the conversation, or are you just here to learn? It's fine if that's the case. Well, I thank all of you for coming after the semester is over and while you're in the midst of grading final assignments. So this is an opportunity if anyone wants to give some last words. Otherwise, you know, thank you. Did you have one last thing, Mark? No? Okay.
No.
Okay. I saw you turn your camera back on, so I just wanted to double check. I think, you know, we will make sure that whatever. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Debbie.
I just wanted to ask one thing because I'm still pretty new here at Cornell. Is it at my previous university that I worked at, sometimes we were able to, students were able to not just take an incomplete, but their grades would be put on hold. And then they would be given extra time to finish the coursework. And again, these were often really extreme cases, but especially for students who have an accommodation and came across that thing where, you know, all of your extensions are coming up at the same time, and then the classes are due. Is that anything that's available here at Cornell of getting some kind of stop, or is it incomplete or nothing?
It's an incomplete that then converts to a grade once the student has completed the work. So it is kind of like a pause, but until the work has been completed, if a transcript is ever requested, it would say INC instead of a grade.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. So Larry, I saw that you just entered the space. Hello. Welcome. We actually were about to wrap up. So if you would like to contribute sort of your classroom experience,
No worries. Sorry for joining late. I just thought I'd listen in, but if you're about to wrap up, that's fine. Thanks.
Okay. And any chance, so I don't know, can I ask what unit you're coming, what you're coming from?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm coming in from Global Development. Yeah.
Global Development, because we're trying to, we'll probably have to do this again once the semester starts, when, you know, I only mentioned this on Monday, so that everybody's here is great. But we'll probably have this conversation again, but we are trying to get a diverse perspective on how it impacts the different colleges and disciplines. So.
Okay. All right, great. Sorry, I couldn't join earlier.
Oh, no worries whatsoever. And I'm going to also provide the chat to, because I see that there's also lots of conversation that's happening in the chat as well. So I'll make sure that gets shared along with recordings to our different offices. And I will also share this with Ryan Lombardi's office. He's the vice president of Student and Campus Life. And so I think that we're just try to start sharing these conversations. And the more that they get to hear what it really is like for the faculty in the classroom, I think the better we can design the systems.
And if I could ask, when you share the chat, I think that from what I see, you know, some good questions here about what Mark shared with this extension option that students can exercise. And I suspect other faculty might also want to be able to ask some questions about exactly how does this work and what about if, and you know, and so I was thinking it would be useful for Rob Vanderlyn, the CTI, to be aware of this as an example in case it's helpful for him to share with other faculty who are trying to, you know, just adapt, right, to changing classroom demands.
Yeah, I love that idea. I didn't think to send it to Rob, so that's great. Okay. And the other space I'm thinking is the Education Policy Committee for the Senate. So anybody who has ideas of who else should be sort of integrated into this conversation, please let me know. And we'll do this again in the autumn when everybody's ready to have this conversation again. So thank you all and happy summer, end of semester. I hope it finishes well for you. Okay, bye.